Alistair Campbell may not have been New Labour's most recognizable face, but as the Prime Minister's chief spin doctor from 1997 to 2003, he was without question the most important person working behind the scenes and was seen by some as just as important in some ways as Tony Blair. Since leaving No. 10 Downing Street, Mr. Campbell has continued to serve as a Labour Party strategist, and he's written several books. The latest, Winners and How They Succeed, provides insights into the strategies that helped him manage three general election victories and orchestrate a seismic shift in British politics. We spoke earlier this fall, and we're rebroadcasting that conversation now. I began the conversation by asking Mr. Campbell, you write about a number of high-profile people that you think are winners. How did you choose these subjects? What do they have in common?
I mean, I chose people that I found interesting. I thought if I found them interesting, other people might. I wanted them all to be people who were not just successful, but in a sense hyper-achieving, real achievers. And as to what they have in common, I think there's some of the things are really obvious. I think they work really hard. I think they're fascinated by the process of what they do. I think they believe in what they do, whether that's sport, business, politics, entertainment, whatever it might be. And what I found was that the Floyd Mayweather is the only one in there who says he never thinks about losing. What I did find was that a lot of them are driven much more by the fear of defeat than any joy in winning.
Well, I was curious about your inclusion of Floyd Mayweather. He's never lost in boxing, obviously fabulously wealthy, but he has a history of domestic violence. Mm-hmm. Should he be celebrated as a winner?
I mean, I addressed that in the book in saying that, you know, this is not a book about perfect people. This is a book about people who set out to do difficult things and they do them. And I thought that some people at the publishers, it's Pegasus, by the way, not Penguin, but some people at the publishers, they were a little bit worried about Mayweather. Lance Armstrong, for example, who I've interviewed several times, I put him in the book, but he's not on the cover. And that's just the judgment that we made. But I think Mayweather, you cannot dispute the fact. See, I was in an office this morning, and like a lot of Americans, there was a picture of Muhammad Ali on the wall. Muhammad Ali touched all parts of the American dream in a way. He was political, he was sport, he was wealth, he was fame. Mayweather deliberately set out to become the richest athlete in the planet. Now, I don't think that's the most noble ambition in the world, but he's done it.
You devote a chapter to Jose Mourinho, the fiery and controversial manager of the Chelsea Football Club. He has won all over Europe, but he also has a history of alienating players and fans. And I wonder whether that's actually part of the winning sensibility.
Well, he's somebody is really interesting. I'm a bit annoyed with him because he's losing at the moment. Chelsea aren't doing very well. And he's in the British version of the book, he's the biggest name on the front cover. But he's somebody who... He says something in the book that I think is another insight into people. Is he doesn't really care what people think about him. And he doesn't care if people think he's obsessed with winning because he is. And he, one of the reasons you describe him as fiery, controversial, is those things. But he took a deliberate step right at the start when he first became manager of Chelsea. And the media age was really becoming a big thing. And the English Premier League was becoming a phenomenon around the world. He took a deliberate decision to be the person who protected the players from the worst of that. And that's to me, is a winning mindset. He just wants his players to be in the best possible condition to play.
You also cite Tom Brady and Pete Carroll. Forgive me for picking on you. You cite them as winners, although one has been accused of being a cheater. The other seems to have made a disastrous strategic decision at the end of last year's Super Bowl game.
That is true. And again,
then Kevin Spacey, and he plays a character who has to kill people to
get
ahead.
Yeah, but he's an actor. The reason Kevin's in there is because I know Kevin Spacey very well because he's lived in London, of course, for some time when he was doing a brilliant job at the Old Vic Theatre. He's interesting because of the innovation. There's a big section in the book about innovation. And I think Netflix is an innovation. It's changing the way that we consume television and entertainment. And Kevin Spacey was a big part of that because of the way that they made and sold House of Cards.
The term a winner has become associated in American politics with Donald Trump, who told the crowd recently, "We will have so much winning if I get elected that you may get bored with winning." And then after the audience cheered, he said, "You'll never get bored with winning. You'll never get bored."
Mm.
Is your idea of winning different from his?
I suspect that my idea of most things is, I hope, different from his. I've got to be honest that I think that a lot of British people looking at the presidential debate here and the way that Trump has dominated certainly the media coverage of it is pretty scary. I just don't think we take him that seriously. I mean, yes, he's a successful businessman. Somebody asked me the other day, why isn't he in the book? And I said, well, okay, there are lots of very successful businessmen. If you go into politics, you are only a winner if you win real power and you use it to make change. And I hope he doesn't.
But the British should understand Donald Trump to some degree because he inherited his wealth, his initial wealth. And this is something that's been a part of the British class system for a long time.
I would agree with that, and I don't like it.
You argue that people tend to confuse tactics with strategy. How are the two distinct?
I think strategy is, if you like, the big plan. It's what I call the big how. What's the central means by which you're trying to get to reach an objective? And the tactics are the tools and the actions to help you do that.
And how should each one be applied in politics?
I think in politics, I think it's a real weakness in a lot of our politics and politicians at the moment that because of the way the media's developed, because of 24/7 news and social media, I think too many politicians are too tactical. They're worrying too much about the next day, the next news cycle, the next thing. And the ones who are really successful, I think, are the ones who stay focused on a strategy. If I had to pick out, the one I've picked in the book that I think is the most impressive in the world at the moment is Angela Merkel of Germany. I think you get a sense of her, of who she is, what she's trying to do, and it comes through all the time.
Even though her politics is quite different from yours?
Her politics are very different. And also, even
so
though...
So you could just watch her as an admirer of the way she deals with politics?
Yeah. And also because I think you've got to remember about Angela Merkel. Because of the political system in Germany and for the obvious reasons that led it to be what it is, she's never even had a majority. She's always had to put together coalitions. And that is part of her skill, is the ability to bring people together around different positions. Whereas, and the other one in the book, and like Lance Armstrong, is in the book but not on the cover, is Vladimir Putin. Because I think we look at Putin, particularly at the moment, and we think, well, the guy's just a bad guy doing bad things. Well, fine, we can think that. But he is being strategic. He does have a sense of his own strategy. And he's an interesting... I'll tell you why Putin's really interesting, is because in my analysis, which is that you have to set the objective and then do the strategy, his are totally aligned. His objective is Russian power and his strategy is Russian power.
And although Russia is going through rough economic times, according to today's polls, he has an 80% approval rating. It's down from 89%, but 80%, I can't imagine any politician complaining about that.
No, but you can't imagine any politician in a so-called democracy that has so much control over the levers of public opinion.
My guest is Alistair Campbell, whose latest book is Winners and How They Succeed, published by Pegasus Books. Whenever people talk about tactics and strategy, Machiavelli's name usually comes up, often in a negative way. Was, in thinking about all of this, is Machiavelli still relevant to these kinds of conversations?
Yeah, I mean, I think Machiavelli has become something of a cliche. People talk about people being Machiavellian if they think there's something malign attached to what's being done. But Machiavelli, what he represents is the understanding that the pursuit of power is, and at its best, is a noble thing that sometimes requires ignoble things to be done. And I think that's just the truth, and people should be more grown up about that.
You have been compared often to Malcolm Tucker, Peter Capaldi's foul-mouthed political operator in the thick of it. Is that okay with you?
Yeah.
Because he also would have been described as Machiavellian.
Is it okay with me? It's okay with me because my kids think it's funny.
Well, it was brilliant performance.
Yeah, it was brilliant. And it's okay with me because actually the thing I like about it is that satire, really good satire, takes a kernel of truth and it builds a kind of a whole new narrative and picture around it. And the kernel of truth about Malcolm Tucker is that he's a control freak trying to control the politicians to stay on message and the media to follow the message. And that's what I was trying to do. So I don't have any trouble with it at all.
Even though you're a lifelong Republican in the British sense of that word, you devote an entire chapter to the Queen. Now, she's pretty much a figurehead, isn't she? How is she a winner?
She is a figurehead. I'll tell you why I think she's a winner. What happened was when I was getting towards the end of the book, and I've gone through all these different chapters of strategy and boldness and innovation and leadership and teamship and resilience and all the things you need to do to win and be an enduring winner. And I was talking to John Brown, who used to run BP, Britain's biggest company. And he's Before it had a very big spill, after his time, I should add. Mm-hmm. So he's in the book as a business winner. And I said, you know what, I can't find anybody who ticks all the boxes. And he said, well, I think the Queen does. And I thought about it. And the reason why I think I define her as a winner is partly because of the whole longevity, the fact she's now overtaken Queen Victoria as our longest reigning monarch, but also at a time when virtually every major institution has seen a decline in its standing, the monarchy, and you're right, I am a British Republican, but the monarchy, for some reason, has seen a reversal. And I think a lot of that is down to her and her strategizing, even though she hates the word.
You quote Harry S. Truman as saying, it's amazing what you can succeed in if you don't care who gets the credit. Mm-hmm. Is that how you see your own career?
I've certainly seen a lot of times in my own career when that was not applied, and I saw how much of a problem it was. I think I am a team player. Look, I've got an ego. I've got ambition. If things go well and people want to say that's down to him, fine. When you come on and you say, I helped Tony Blair win 3 elections, Tony Blair was the biggest factor in that. But
he credited you with coining the term New Labour, which was an important part rebranding.
I was an important part of his team. But I think one of the reasons I love sport and one of the reasons why I've written this book partly to show people in business and politics what you can learn from the best of sport, not least in team building. Because one of the great things about sport, we just assume in politics that political teams fall out, that we can't get on with each other, that the egos will always clash. Well, these top sports teams now, whether it's NFL or it's baseball or it's soccer or whatever it is, you're talking about multimillionaire brands, young men, and yet they do come together as teams. And there's a lot we can learn from that.
You also mentioned Bill Clinton as another noteworthy winner. How did his approach to governing influence your work with New Labour? Did you adopt triangulation, which was his major strategy?
I think we did a lot that was based on not just what he did, but also the discussions that we had at the time that he was modernising the Democrats and we were trying to modernise the Labour Party. And I think it sometimes upsets Tony when I say this, but Bill Clinton's the greatest communicator I've ever seen close up. And I think he's also somebody that I cite a lot in the work that I do now with different individuals if they're going through a bad time with the media. And I will always say, look, just look at Bill Clinton. It's amazing what you can get through if you just stay focused on your own strategy.
Despite the scandals that would have brought down some other people.
In a funny sort of way, even because of. I think there's something about people like Clinton in part because they think he's flawed.
After May's election loss, Labour selected Jeremy Corbyn, a hard left MP, as its leader. You, Tony Blair, and other New Labour leaders have spoken publicly against him. Why do you feel his rise is dangerous to Labour? Isn't he pretty much returning Labour to its roots?
Well, that would be one way of looking at it. I worry, though, that ultimately you have to remember that most citizens, whether it's in Britain or America, they don't live inside a political bubble. And I could be proven wrong. I didn't think he'd win the leadership, and he has. And maybe he can connect with the public, but I just think most people live their lives in the centre ground. And I think that the reason why you talk about returning to Labour's roots, Labour historically lost a lot of elections by vacating any sense of being in the centre ground. We won 3 in a row by owning the centre as well as being on the left.
on the other hand, it pretty much established the way British society was structured with medical and all sorts of other things.
That's true. Labour governments have done great things. But, you know, I worry that we're going to find it hard to get back into power.
Could the rise of a left-leaning leader like Corbyn be interpreted as a rebuke of New Labour and the Blair years and a feeling that Labour has been ineffective as an opposition party over the past 5 years?
Yes. Yes. And but I think that the reason we started to become ineffective was because we started that move away from an understanding that you can, you know, be left of center, but don't vacate the center ground.
Tony Blair said in The Guardian a few months ago that electing Corbyn would be akin to driving Labour off a cliff. So do you see Labour is splitting into two different factions?
I don't think that the history suggests that I don't believe there'll be a breakaway party as such, but I think there is going to be a struggle about the future of the Labour Party, and I think it's going to take some time to pan out. And there's David Cameron, the Prime Minister, today. He's spoken at their party convention, and he's clearly trying to stake out ownership of the centre ground.
What's next for you? Will you be working at all for the Labour Party before the next election, even under this new leadership?
I don't know. I mean, I've got a very nice life now. I do lots of writing and consultancy and speaking and all the things that old has-beens do once they've vacated the front line. But I went back for the last election. But look, Jeremy Corbyn is he's got very, very – there's some things we might have in common, but he's got a very different understanding of how you go in elections.
Alistair Campbell was the 10 Downing Street Press Secretary and Director of Communications and Strategy from 1997 to 2003. His latest book, and you've been writing a lot of books since.
I've written 11, yeah.
This one is Winners and How They Succeed. It is published by Pegasus Books, and it has been my great pleasure to have you on our show.
Thank you very much. Nice to see you again.